run for office. Or just go to your local meetings, go to your school board meetings. Or you can go to some of the local protests. I went to the Portland protest against the logging policies of George Bush. About 3,000 people there. You say you're afraid? A lot of us are afraid.
The Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life, you hear me? Give my creation life.
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Get countdown. 6... 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast area.
Your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hello again, and here we are on a Friday. Yes, TGIF, it is Friday. Kind of seemed like a short week, though, didn't it? With the holiday in there up until Tuesday, and including Tuesday, it kind of was a short week. So glad you're with us this afternoon here on the Guy James Show. It's a lazy, hazy Friday afternoon here in Southwest Florida. Kind of an unusual day. It almost looks like a fall northern day today. Lots of clouds and a little bit rainy and all that. Very, very, very unusual looking day here. Hope it's nice where you're at, though. Sun shining and all that. Hope you're having a great day here on the 7th. Yes, July the 7th already. My. Time is marching on. We'd love to have you call the show, 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254. That's a toll-free call, and we'd love to hear from you. Lots to talk about today. Of course, Junior Bush had a press conference today, if you want to call that. I don't know. And we had the debate last night. Anxious to hear what you have to say about that, Holy Joe and Ned Lamont had their debate last night. I found it very interesting. Many, many things we want to talk about today. We're going to have a guest on a little later. Chrissy Setzer from the Senate Majority Report is going to be on to talking about that phone jamming scheme that Ken Mellman and the White House is in up to their ears, obviously. While driving over to the studio today, I heard Rush Limbaugh talking about Bush's foreign policy. Says he's consistent. I thought that was a good one. Consistent. He was talking about Saddam violating UN resolutions 15 times. Rush was going on and on and on about 15 violations of the UN resolutions. How much more of this could we take? You can't violate UN resolutions 15 times. Now, do we like the UN and go along with what they want to do, or don't we? The Republicans love the UN, and they hate the UN. Whenever it favors them, they want to go along with what the UN has to say. And when it does not favor them, well, to hell with the UN, never heard of them, don't want anything to do with them. Haven't you found that to be the truth? 15 violations Saddam had. Why, we just couldn't put up with that. You know who I believe, and now check me out on this. I'm not going to say it's 100% true, but last time I checked, I think Israel had about 70 violations of UN resolutions. I didn't hear Rush screaming about that. Didn't hear that at all. But then his mouth works very, very well. I must admit, Rush's mouth, one of the more prolific mouths in the world. Doesn't matter what comes out of it, but his mouth does work very, very well. Too bad the rest of his body doesn't work all that well, but you know, you can't have it all. We're going to talk a little later about some questions that should have been asked of Junior Bush today. And my, oh my, Kenny Lay, a couple of you wrote and chastised me about the, again, I heard it again about how I didn't cover the Ken Lay story good enough to suit him. I don't know what else I can say. He's dead, period. I heard Mr. Bush say that Kenny Lay was a good guy. Kenny Lay was a good guy. That's what he said. We got around 5,000 Enron employees that lost their life savings. We have stockholders that lost the money. He ripped off the states, the pension fund of, I believe it's a teacher's fund, perhaps, of Florida. I'm not sure which one. Lost a fortune on it. Screwed everybody. Everybody that they could get their hands on, they screwed, and screwed them good. And Kenny Lay's a good guy. Ah, yes. Kenny Lay is just a swell guy on account of that. I'm not sure I'll ever understand that, but somebody sent me, and I thought this was so appropriate, and if you think it's mean, why then so be it, but I thought it was very appropriate. Somebody sent me this just a short time before the show. I believe it came off of Democratic Underground. Let me see, who did it? Oh, by Liberal and Proud. And let me just quote this for you. He says, "The tragedy in all this, and it's as Greek as it gets, Sophocles would have known what to do with this guy. The tragedy of all this is obviously not Lay's death, and as tragic as the loss is for thousands, the thousands and employees and stockholders, and it's prodigious, it's not the worst part, not the Greek part. The worst part of all of this is there never was, nor will there ever be, any outrage from his peers. From his pal, the president, he was just good old Kenny boy doing what they all do. They'll speak fondly of him at his funeral. They'll laud him. They'll speak like Antony over the dead body of Brutus. They take care of their own, don't they? So he says in this, I'll speak for the rest of us, those without private jets, those without presidential cell phone numbers, those without spigots for money. I'll speak for those with a conscience. Ken Lay is dead. Huzzah, huzzah." That's from Liberal and Proud on the Democratic Underground. And I guess he speaks for a lot of people. How dare the President of the United States say, "Oh, Kenny Lay was a good guy." Good guy. Is that what good guys do? Amass a personal fortune? Actually, he even died with a personal fortune. And now, from what I understand, the money's untouchable. I hear him arguing about it on TV, lawyers arguing, saying, well, they can't touch it now that he's dead. Now, I heard one last night saying, now that he's dead, that erases the whole thing, and they can't take any more of his money. His estate should not be left with a penny, not a red cent. I don't feel sorry for him. I don't feel sorry for his wife. They had to know he was stealing from the company. But I think this poster had it exactly right. Had it exactly right. The man was a thief. A white-collar thief, and I guess that makes it better. Somehow, a man that can steal millions, dare I say billions of dollars, from the public with a shirt and tie on and a coat suit, that's not so bad. But a guy can stop in the local 7-Eleven and walk out with a bag of chips and a case of pop under his arm and get arrested and end up with, you know, that's horrible. I'll never understand. Sometimes justice isn't fair. That's for sure. It just isn't fair sometimes. I'd love to know what you have to think about old Kenny Boy Lay. 866-546-5254. Last night, I watched this debate with Lamont and Lieberman. I have to admit, I didn't know that was going to be on until the last minute last night, so I tuned in to watch it, thought it would be interesting. And I had not seen Ned Lamont talk in person. And at the beginning of the debate last night, and these are my honest thoughts, I thought Ned Lamont looked very much like the proverbial deer in the headlights. And I think many of you would have to agree with me. That is what he looked like. And I worried that he'd get buried by this very experienced, poly, slimy bastard, Joe Lieberman. But as soon as Holy Joe opened his mouth and let out his first few words, I knew that he was cooked. He spent the whole evening quoting JFK, which made him look absolutely silly. Because when he first quoted JFK, I was expecting the late Lloyd Benson to come on stage and remind Joe that he was no Jack Kennedy. I thought it was ludicrous of him of all people, to stand up there and quote JFK. Oh, I wanted to just spit when he did that. And then Lieberman started quoting St. Ronald of Reagan, which to Democrats didn't gain him any points at all. And how many times during that debate did he say, "There you go again"? He tried, and in my opinion, very unsuccessfully, I believe, to paint Lamont as someone who's shifty and undecided, and it didn't work. And it was very obvious that he had no, you know, Lamont, it was more than obvious that he had no national TV experience. I think Ned Lamont carried himself well, and he spoke with conviction concerning what he stands for. Without question, he stands for the people and the common good. But I also thought Lieberman was quite good at expressing what he stands for. And it was obvious what Joe Lieberman stands for. Joe Lieberman stands for Joe Lieberman. How many times did he say it last year? My 18 years, my 18 years, my 18 years. Is that supposed to be a big plus? You know, I'm a powerful senator, and I can get anything I want for Connecticut. That's why my people elect me. And Dear Joe didn't win any friends within the party when he disparaged Lamont and his supporters. Did you catch that? Lamont and his supporters, he said. I guess Joe figures that he's, since he's got the entire Republican population of Connecticut behind him, he doesn't need any real Democrats on his side. All in all, I really thought it was a shameful display by a veteran of the United States Senate. He was cold, he was quite disingenuous, he was shifty, and I thought he was desperate. I definitely think he looked desperate last night, and I've never liked Joe Lieberman. That's one thing. I love Al Gore. But I got to tell you, when I heard Al Gore pick Joe Lieberman as his VP, I thought, "Oh my God, Al, what are you thinking?" Those were my words. You can ask. I told all my friends that. But I've never liked him. But after that performance last night, I like him even less, a whole lot less than I did before. And I'm sending a check today to the Lamont campaign. I think that's exactly what I'll do. I'll just send a check to the Lamont campaign. Doggone it. I think the guy's worthy. I think he's very worthy. And another thing about last night's debate, Holy Joe was talking about all this great progress we've made in Iraq. I was hoping he would expound upon that. Is Joe on dope or is he a dope? It's one or the other there, I guess. What progress would that be, Joe? Really, what progress would it be? Oh, yes, the elections that we've allowed them to have so that they could put their own people in control so things could get better and the violence would subside. Last Tuesday, Baghdad Central Morgue said that they received 1,595 bodies for the month, which was 16% more than in May. Sound like things are better, doesn't it? Yep. And the killings have picked up since Zarqawi was killed. That really turned out to be a big deal, didn't it? Where I can see, it was only good for raising Bush's popularity for a couple of points. Do you ever think about that? Anyone all of a sudden deciding that they now like Bush because Zarqawi being killed? He's got to be a special kind of idiot. And even Ambassador Khalilzad said that killing Zarqawi hadn't made Iraq any safer. And who's in a better position to know than him? And the really good news is that the Sunni and Shia are having themselves a nice little civil war in the streets of Baghdad. But not to worry, everything's peachy keen inside the green zone. It seems that as long as the green zone is okay and Bush and Rumsfeld and other U.S. officials can, you know, they can go there and they can walk around in safety inside that fortress, all is well in Iraq. But seriously, can any of you see what the Bush foreign policy is right now? Is there any sense whatsoever of a cohesive, competent, workable plan? I think it's obvious to even the most disinterested party that Bush has no plan for Iraq. He's content to let it play out no matter what the result. And plans for Iran? Seems to be nothing but indecision on Iran. Are we planning an invasion? Are we going to solve it diplomatically? Are we going to talk with them? What's going on? No one seems to know, including the Iranians, which isn't a good situation at all. And North Korea? Does anyone know what's up with that? We invade Iraq because we're led to believe they're a threat to us militarily with WMDs and all. We invade them, occupy their country, get mired in the mud of a civil war with no end in sight. We more or less bankrupt our own nation in the process with no end in sight, but we're told North Korea has missiles that threaten the United States, and what are we going to do about it? Nothing. Oh, I forgot. There's no oil in North Korea. There's a point, and also there's the fact that they've got a million-man army and wouldn't be a pushover like Saddam's little Republican Guard was. If Bush is going to be consistent, shouldn't we be working towards a regime change in North Korea and then planting the seeds of democracy in that impoverished nation? I thought that was our mission in the world, to plant democracy far and wide. Can anybody give me an example of any consistency in the Bush foreign policy whatsoever? But that didn't stop Holy Joe Lieberman last night from defending Bush's policies. No, sir, he stood by his stand on the war, and he didn't apologize it for one bit. Hey, Joe, since we all know Bush doesn't have a plan, just what the hell is your plan? Don't think he mentioned it last night, did he? He kept asking questions of Lamont, but I don't think Joe answered anything. 866-546-5254. You can call the show. Let's go to the phones. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, Guy. It's Greg from Connecticut.
Hi, Greg.
I thought I'd do a little Friday ranting and raving about good old Joe.
Yeah.
Now, I have to admit, I didn't watch the whole thing either because he's about the level of Bush. Now, if I watch him on TV, I just get sick to my stomach.
It was hard to watch it. Believe me, I thought it was.
But the take-home message, I think now, a lot of people were kind of hard on Lamont, said, you know, he was really nervous and this and that and the other. But I think the take-home message, is, as it plays in Peoria, as they say, was that Joe was just really rude and angry and used all the tricks from Karl Rove's playbook in debating.
I agree.
So, you know, I think it came off that he had this sense of total entitlement, like, how dare anyone question me, you know. And so I think it just reinforced for everybody that it's all about Joe. You know, it's not about what's best for the state of Connecticut, or it's not about even Democrats. It's what Joe wants.
That's it. I couldn't agree more. It was Joe's plan for Joe. He seemed desperate to me. He really did.
And, you know, and the scary thing is, you know, is I think at any point Joe can just drop the whole thing. You know, he's gotten several offers from the Bush administration for some cushy job, and he could do that, at which point, you know, Republican Governor Jody Rell just appoints a Republican to be the senator, and he's totally capable of doing that too.
I absolutely agree. And, you know, I didn't think I know, and I just said it a while ago, I thought Lamont, when the whole thing opened up, when the show opened up, he did look like a deer in the headlights, but he got comfortable finally. And,
well, Joe was ready to throw any dirt he could, and, you know, he went, he lied about he was defending Social Security and this and that. You know, so when you're basically faced with a Republican like that, what are you going to do? And, you know, a lot of people commented, you know, had Joe been half as aggressive when he debated Cheney, you know, maybe he'd be vice president today.
Oh, yeah.
He basically did for Cheney what Monica did for Bill, because he was among friends. It's only when he's among Democrats that he's nice and nasty.
Hey, that, you know, that's a great point. He treated Cheney with kid gloves. It was like he was awestruck standing there beside Cheney or something. He did. He treated Cheney like Cheney was a real gentleman or something.
Well, you know, and he reached right in. I was reading on Daily Coast stuff. He used this rhetorical device that Reagan used, oh, there you go again, and this and that. So it's like, you know, you don't have to scratch too much below the surface, and you'll see that he's really a Republican at heart. You know, but what amazes me though is that he wants to have it both ways. You know, he's not going to go through the primary. You know, he's going to run as an independent if he can't win. So it's like he wants to game the system just like he did when he was running for vice president, because it really showed weakness to the campaign to say, well, I'm going to run as senator too, just in case it doesn't work.
Oh, I was just incensed when he started throwing around quotes by JFK. I really did think of. All of a sudden, I'm having one of those brain things talked about him during the show. But
you're talking about the Dan Quayle and
yeah, and Lloyd Benson. You know, I really did expect Lloyd Benson to pop his head around the corner, God rest his soul, and say, you know, you're no Jack Kennedy. I was offended by that. I really was.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if you've heard too, but there was rumors in the Washington Post that there were several senators that were going to come to Connecticut to tell us all how wonderful Joe is. Well, one of them being Joe Biden, who's, you know, a whore, so that's no big surprise. And then there was Ken Salazar from Colorado, who is about to qualify to be a whore. He hasn't been there long enough. But the shocking part was Barbara Boxer was allegedly going to come too.
Yeah, I'd heard that.
But then a whole bunch of people called and, you know, outraged to her offices and said they shouldn't do that. And my father called, you know, her office, and when he calls, it usually sounds very much like me. But anyway, we all said, you know, you should not do this. And so evidently she's backed off now. Because
oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, I don't have that confirmed, but that's the scuttlebutt that she's backed down now from coming to Connecticut to talk about good old Joe. So.
Well, that's surprising to me. That is. I hope she hangs on to that. Wow.
Well, there's a lot of people that are trying to shift gears a little bit because, you know, Hillary actually stood up and said she would support the winner. Russ Feingold said he'd support the winner. Now, there's your odd ones out there. You know, the Ben Nelson said he'd support Lieberman no matter what, and Pryor of Arkansas. But, you know, there's a good contingent saying they'll support the winner, including Diane Farrell, who's running for the House seat here in this district, which is very important because she was sort of Joe's protege. And then for her to turn around and say she'll support the winner is a big step.
Well, it's tough that it's come to this. You know, he's literally on his knees begging, and I guess as he should be. But he really did act like a pompous ass last night. You know, my 18 years. How many times did he say that last night? He kept saying it over and over and over again.
Well, the thing that he doesn't realize, okay, Dodd is, the senior senator of Connecticut, although he's younger than Lieberman. But his last election, he sailed right through. Now, I certainly don't agree with Dodd on every single issue, but I'd say he's a hell of a lot of a better Democrat than Lieberman is.
Absolutely.
Know?
Absolutely.
So, you know, but, you know, the difference is that Dodd, last I looked, didn't say that, you know, we should intervene in the Schiavo matter or try to undermine Social Security or vote for cloture on Alito and all that. So, you know, with Joe's philosophy, it's that, you know, somebody like good old Kenny Lay or Michael Eisner, somebody, they should continue in their jobs because they've been doing it for a long time.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And wasn't it strange that a United States senator with a D behind his name spent the whole time trying to prove that he was a Democrat?
Yeah,
you know, I found that just to be really a weird situation.
Well, his whole strategy is weird because on the one hand he's saying I'm a Democrat, but then he's saying, well, you know, it's the real radical wing of the party that's supporting Ned Lamont and this and that and the other. Well, I guess, you know, one third of the delegates at the nominating convention were just fringe lunatics then, you know, that voted for Lamont.
Lamont and his supporters, he said. I think he alienated a whole bunch of people when he said that last night. About how they were pretty much insinuated they were a bunch of lunatic fringe, Lamont and his supporters. That'll gain him a lot of favor with Democrats.
Yeah. But, so I don't know how it's going to end up. You know, I'm hoping and praying that Joe will lose the primary, but then I don't know what will happen then. I mean, people speculate if he goes as independent, that could split the Republican vote because the Republicans are rubbing their hands together saying that this idiot Schlesinger now maybe has a chance, you know, if Lieberman goes independent, you know. So I don't know what's going to happen. I think Joe would probably still pull it off in a general election. Mm. But, you know, I want it to be the bloodiest battle he's ever had in his life.
Yeah, well, he deserves the bloodiest battle he's ever had in his life, that's for sure. I wonder what local polls are showing up there now. Do you have any reliable
ones? There were a lot of local polls, and there was one that had, you know, who won the debate, and there was like 85% Lamont. You know, but you know how local polls are, and I think that the Lamont supporters are much more, you know, net savvy than the Lieberman.
Sure.
So that doesn't necessarily mean anything. But like I said, most of the local coverage is focusing on the fact that Joe seemed really angry, that he seemed put out about being there, that he was, you know, just rude and boorish. So, you know, I don't think he won too many friends. And I think a lot of people said yesterday that what Joe needed was just a spectacular victory. And, you know, even if you look at it and say it's a tie, then, you know, Joe didn't do that.
Well, he reminded me of, you know, a rodeo, the opening the gate, and the old Mad Bull came out. Just right out of the gate, he went crazy on him. About the second sentence of his open statement, he started in on. He was rude. He was boorish. I was surprised. I've got to admit, I was somewhat taken aback by Joe Lieberman last night. I've never liked the guy, but I liked him a whole lot less after that debate was over.
Well, you heard the Lamont shot, though, at one point. He looked over and said, hey, this isn't Fox News. So that was great.
Yeah.
I don't think Joe appreciated that too much. But that's where was his training ground, you know, for attacking Democrats. So, you know, it was kind of appropriate. So.
Did you, at one point, there was an outburst by somebody in the audience that said something, and Lieberman, the dialogue stopped for a moment, and Lieberman made a comment about it. Is there any talk there of what that was?
I don't remember that moment. Now, there was something that people were talking about Lamont's tax form or some stupid thing that Lieberman says, why won't you show your tax form or something like that? So I don't know what that's about, you know. But
well, I know what it's about. It's about pretty much like Kerry and his military record. He showed everything that he's legally bound to show.
Right.
And there's a whole lot more that you can show that you're not legally bound to show. But, you know, I believe in a little bit of privacy. If there's some private things, I it doesn't mean it has to be illegal. But he's Lamont was correct in saying I've done everything that I'm legally bound to do. That's good enough for me.
Well, and Joe just bathes in hypocrisy because, you know, he says Lamont is buying his way into the election and this and that. Well, you know, Lieberman is the one who has much more cash on hand. He has massive lobbyist support, most of which are Republican lobbyists. And then he turns around and accuses Lamont, who's not taking any lobbyist funds. And not just that, in his biography, Lieberman, I forget who he was defending or something, Biden or something, and said, you know, oh, there's nothing wrong with, you know, having a lot of money that you put in the campaign. So, you know, he's just shown that he'll lie right back and forth, whatever he has to do, meaning it is just all about Joe.
Well, he certainly made it seem so. And, you know, that race to me is of particular interest. And, of course, we have the gentleman out in Colorado, Tester, who's already won his primary and has got a good shot at the Senate seat out there. I'm paying particular attention to that race and to Lieberman's race. Those very, very interesting. Tester's race out in Montana is going to be that's going to be a barometer, I'd say.
Oh, well, my hat was off to that lady who called the other day from Montana, you know, because Montana, I think, is really a bellwether for the country. And, you know, states like Colorado and Montana and that kind of thing are the ones that are going to switch long before your Georgias and then Arkansas or Alabama or something like that. I think a lot of people see that as kind of the future. They got a great governor in Brian Schweitzer. You know, I think they have the Democratic Senate majority, or it's the House majority in Montana, and now Tester. So if they can get rid of Mr. Burns, then I think they'll be in really good shape.
Well, you know, a state like Montana, and that was Pamela from Montana. She's a good listener. You know, it's a farm state by and large, and Tester's a farmer. And, you know, I'm from farm territory, and I know farmers very, very well. And, you know, they're very conservative. Most farmers are very conservative, and I don't mean that in a political way. They just live their lives conservatively. And sooner or later, you can't BS a farmer.
Yeah.
And, you know, they may have had enough. And when that tide starts to turn, the Repubs are in some serious trouble.
Well, Schweitzer, he's smart about it, too, because he brings issues right to them that are of their importance, that are important to those people, farming issues, that type of thing. You know, I mean, I would assume that Brian Schweitzer has, you know, reasonably progressive views on, you know, gay marriage or whatever those things, but he doesn't bring those things to the forefront. His main presentation is what's relevant to the people here in this state, you know, and that's totally what, you know, for instance, Lieberman has lost sight of.
Right, right. Well, it's going to be fun watching it. When is the primary date in
that Canada? It is August the 8th.
August 8th. Well,
right.
Boy, the whole nation will be waiting to see how that one turns out. That's for sure.
Yeah, and if Lieberman does lose, it's going to really affect him running as an independent, because he's going to totally look like a loser, and, you know, so...
Yeah.
I think if that happens, he could try and pull out and take some job in the administration or something. So.
Well, it would be interesting, too, if he does pull that off and try to run as an independent. It might also separate the men from the boys in the Democratic Party. We'll see if there any of his good Senate buds go along with him on that mission. I bet you they drop off like flies.
Oh, they have to. And, you know, Schumer, I mean, if Schumer continues to support him through this, I think we should start recalling, finding someone to take Schumer's place,
right.
too.
You know? Right.
So anyway, that was the Friday rant.
Hey, thanks for calling. I wanted to talk about that today, and I'm glad you called and got you got more than your 2 cents worth. You got a dollar's worth in on that.
Okay.
So
very good. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks so much. Yeah, I found that fascinating last night. I really did. Here's a guy, Ned Lamont, that just a few months ago, nobody heard of. And yes, he's a man of means. I was surprised to learn, now I may have this not quite right, but was it his grandfather or great-grandfather who was on the board of directors of the J.P. Morgan Company? I'm not sure if I have that exactly right. Thought I saw that on the crawl last night. But here's a man that... you know, has run a business. He knows what it is. He's been in politics before, not at the level of United States Senator. But I'm not one of those who thinks that you necessarily need to work your way up the ladder. Start out as a county commissioner and then go to a state representative and then to the state senate and then maybe to Congress and then to the Senate. I don't believe in that. I see no reason whatsoever that Joe Smith walking down the street in Dubuque, Iowa right now can't walk up and throw his hat in the ring. He might be that, you know, I'm so fond of talking about the butcher, baker, and candlestick maker. He might be the guy that makes donuts down at the local bakery in the morning. And he's just as capable of being a United States Senator as anybody else, in my opinion. And I don't believe that bull crap of having to work your way up in politics. That's one of the things I'm sick of, personally. I'm very, very sick about that. And after we take a little break, I'm going to come back and I'm going to talk about that. I've got a bone to pick on now over that whole issue, and I'm going to pick it after we come back. Stay tuned.
Now. That he heard me when I called from far behind him. I miss him every day that he was gone. But now I cry alone. I put on my bravest face and watched him off to war. My lover will be coming home no more. My lover will be coming home. In a little town outside of San Antonio. But now I cry alone. With no money for college, my lover joined the Corps. My lover will be coming home no more. My lover will be coming home no more. In this house is like a ship run aground, and I think I hear his voice in every sound. Sometimes I feel I've half a mind to burn this whole place down, to exorcise the ghosts that haunt my home. But now I cry alone. Sometimes at night standing at the door, my lover will be coming home no more. Happily ever after is the dream of any schoolgirl, finding a prince charming of her own. But now I cry alone, sifting through the wreckage that is washed upon the shore. Coming home no more. My lover.
Say, did you ever notice there's no commercials on the Guy James Show? That's by design, you know. This program is brought to you by the listeners of the Guy James Show. That's right, it's a listener-supported program, supported by the listeners and Guy James, of course. And we hope you'll join that group of supporters of the program. You can just do that at www.theguyjamesshow.com. You can help keep this show on the net every single day and make it bigger and better than ever. And we hope you'll do that. And we're delighted to have all of you with us this afternoon here at the Truth and Broadcasting Building, high atop the Truth and Broadcasting Building on this cloudy, cloudy afternoon here in Southwest Florida. Thanks for joining the show today. Before we went away to break, I told you that I wanted to talk a little bit about politics when we came back, and I am really sick of a lot of it. I was just mentioning before we went away to break that I don't see any reason why you have to work your way up the ladder in politics, that damn political ladder. I hate it. I absolutely have nothing but contempt and disdain for the whole process anymore. I've seen it too much. I've gotten a little too close to it, as I'm sure some of you have as well. You see all the ass-kissing and boot-licking that goes on, and pardon me for saying that, but that's exactly what it is. Might as well tell it like it is. That's exactly what it is. You see somebody, your local county commissioner or your state representative perhaps, and people go to work for him and they end up being the county chairs. You know, let me talk a little bit about Florida. I haven't lived in Florida all my life. I lived most of my life in Ohio. There are 88 counties in Ohio. I'm not sure how many there are in Florida. I think around 67. I'm not sure. But, you know, you've got your local DEC people, Democratic Executive Committee. You've got your county chairs, your county committee chairman and chairwoman, your state committee man, state committee woman, up to the chairs in the state party. And it's a bunch of crap. Let me just say it how it is. This is how I feel. It's a bunch of crap. It's a bunch of people marching to the orders coming down from inside the Beltway. That's just what it is. It's a big political, I don't know what else to call it. It's just a big old ugly spider web is what it is. And here we have the DNC at the top of the ladder, barking orders down to the state chairs. State chairs barking orders down at the state committee people, and I know there has to be some organizations. That's not what I'm complaining about. What I'm complaining about is the fact that all these people are beholden to one another. You've got your, and I've seen it so many times, and they're going to hate me for saying it, but the people that hate me for saying it know me, and they know I'm going to say it if I'm thinking it. And I've seen it too many times. You have a big political soiree in your area, and you invite you invite one of the big shots in from the party to come in and speak for a banquet or a big doings that you're having. And, of course, it's the county chair or the state committee man or the state committee woman that's got to go greet him at the airport and gets to sit with him and introduce him to everybody and just be the big wheel for the evening. And that's how you earn your political stripes, you see. You kiss somebody's butt. That's how you do it. And when the state chair calls down to the county level or the state, you know, sends the marching orders down to the local party. Oh, yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. Yes. Oh, yes. We'll do. Oh, you know, in their exalted position, the state chair or state committee man or state committee woman, it's a bunch of bunk is what it is. And I'm really tired of it. And I know, like I said before, I know we need organization within the party. But I can tell you this. I can tell you this, and I can tell you this with a great deal of knowledge about the whole thing, and I am immersed in politics, and I know a lot about a lot of places in the country of just how it is with the state party chairman and the committees and all this and that, which doesn't amount to a damn. It's the grassroots people, the netroots people who get out and knock on the doors, make the phone calls, do all this and that, to do the real work in the party. They're the people that matter. They're the ones that ought to be barking orders if anybody's going to be barking orders. But it's just sickening to me that all the power rests at the top and all the money goes to the top. and you've got a handful of people deciding how it's going to be. Let me ask you this. If that's such a wise idea, let me ask you this. If during the last election, when John Kerry was getting pilloried by the right on the Swift Boat things, what would the grassroots people in this country have done about that situation? You know what they would have done. You know exactly what they would have done. If there had been a committee of all the grassroots people in this country, they would have got together and gone and told John Kerry to go on TV and tell George Bush and his people to go straight to hell. That's what would have happened. Instead, this handful of people, the power brokers in the party, the people, oh no, let's not offend anybody. Let's be very nice and let's not. The decisions at the top and the decisions at the state levels in many cases have been pathetic. Not all of them. Not all of them. But here we sit in the state of Florida, for example. Lost the last two national elections in a state that I will bet you that registered voters that blue outnumbers red. I'll bet you that's the truth. And yet we've lost the last two. We had a chairman here before, the one we have now, that was intent upon, hell-bent upon doing nothing but promoting himself. And that's what he did. He promoted himself. Boy, I'm popular with the party, aren't I? You want to hear how I think it is? That's how I think it is. And I do not believe that the grassroots Democrats in the United States, the grassroots, the great grassroots, I don't think you're being properly represented. And I resent that. Because the people down at the grassroots level are the party. Are the party and have always been the party. Not the bosses. Not the bosses at the top. They're not the party. It's the people that go out and do the actual work. Instead of barking orders from the top. Well, there you have it. I've made big time friends with a lot of committee chairmen and all that sort of thing. But I see it so much. I see it so much. I see the butt kissing that goes on, and it's just sickening to me. And I know many of you have related it to me in phone calls and emails, and we've chatted back and forth about this situation. And it doesn't matter if we're talking about Washington and Oregon, Maine or Florida, or somewhere in between in Illinois. It doesn't matter. It's taking place all across the country. And the Democrats need to put a stop to this. We just need to put a stop to this. I'm not claiming to have all the answers. But I recognize a problem when I see it, and it is a problem. And I'm tired of politics as usual within the Democratic Party. Politics as usual has gotten us in a whole lot of trouble. A lot of trouble. Well, I guess that's my rant for the day on politics. If you agree or disagree, I'd love to hear from you. I probably got some email coming right now from a state committee chair. Like I care. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. I'm not telling them anything they don't know. I'm not telling them a damn thing they don't know. People are sick of it. They really are. And I know of groups of Democrats all around the country that are in the mood to revolt. And that doesn't mean revolt and go start another party. That's not a third party movement I'm talking about. That's a movement within the Democratic Party to clean out the dead wood, clean out the cobwebs, and let's get this car overhauled and let's get this baby up and running again the way it ought to be. I don't mean just change the oil and get it back on the road again. I mean get it in fine condition. Let's just completely overhaul it and get started again. Let's get the Democratic Party back to what it ought to be. Let's get it back to its roots. Let's get it back to what, for the reason it was formed, for the people, by real people, representing the real good, hard-working people of America. Let's take the party back to its roots, back where it ought to be, run by those kind of people as well. This party, this great Democratic Party, deserves no less. I've said enough. Let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, this is Juanita.
Hi, Juanita.
I watched I watched the debate last night. I watched part of the press conference today, and I made myself watch Laura and what's his face on Larry King. And anyway, I have to make myself some time because I think I should know a little bit what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I thought you had that down. I thought he looked like he was in the headlight too. But he was. I thought he was excellent.
Yeah, he got warmed up. He did.
Yeah.
And hey, who amongst us, you know, first time on national TV and everything, you're going to be a little nervous and all. And he was. I don't care who you are. That's going to happen to you.
He got it down good. And I'm like you. I'm with you, Guy. I want our Democrats. I want to stand up for us, the people. We the people.
Well,
if it takes saying something you naughty, okay.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you know, lead follower, get out of the way, and you know, there's a lot of people in the party right now that just need to move aside.
Oh yeah, and you know, we're getting to where we're like England was with their kings and queens, and England, when you see their parliament, when they're talking, they holler and carry on and hoot and everything.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well,
and we're over here. Oh, we got to be this and that and the other.
I heard somebody talking about that very thing the other night about how the Senate, for example, is such a phony environment. I yield to my distinguished friend. I yield to the honorable so forth and back and forth. Oh, please.
I know.
Hey, you know, I'd love just once to say, you know, distinguished. No, he's not distinguished. Not at all. The guy's a thief.
I mean, and I love the guy from that you were talking about from
Montana?
Montana.
Oh, Tester, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I happened to stance on his and debate with Burns.
Yeah.
I didn't know anything about him. And I, wow, you know, I like this guy. And he's got the cutest commercials about his haircut.
Well, yeah, he's got that flat top haircut. Somewhere around here, I had Burns did an ad against him. I wonder if I can find this thing.
I think I sent it to you. Or maybe not.
Yeah, the Burns says his haircut, it features about, okay, this is Burns' ad. It said, and they got an actor on there. Said, fella comes in for a trim on his flat top because he's running for U.S. Senate. Guess he didn't want anybody to know he opposes the gay marriage ban. Thinks flag burning is right and supports higher taxes. So I told him, you're going to need a lot more than the haircut to cover up all that. Didn't leave much of a tip either. So Tester's party comes back and with their own ad. It said, here's the tip. The man attacking John Tester is an actor, a fake, sent by Senator Burns. it was good. It was very good.
Yeah, he's great. And he said that when he needed to, you know what he's talking about, you know, plant his seed or whatever.
Yep.
He said, I won't be out campaigning.
No.
He said, I'm going to be, you know, he said, I'm a hands-on farmer.
He's real people, and we need a whole lot more of those.
That's what we need.
You betcha.
We need for real. Somebody with common sense.
I think the kind of guy that I think the framers meant to be in Washington anyway.
Uh-huh.
And I
bet you Benjamin Franklin was a lot like that.
Well, Benjamin Franklin was Benjamin Franklin was a man for he was a man's man. people liked Benjamin
well,
Franklin from what I hear.
He seemed to be a ladies' man too.
Oh well, yeah, that too. He had quite the reputation. That's
yeah.
for sure.
Yeah.
But he was a down to earth man, and he'd get down and argue with the best of them if necessary, and yet he could be distinguished as well. He represented his country in France, you know, at the treaty talks and all that. I mean, Benjamin Franklin, everybody ought to read all they can about Ben Franklin.
Oh, yeah.
He's one of our
yeah.
great Americans. Hey, thanks for your call.
And one more thing.
Oh, yes.
You know, I was talking, this is just a little statement. I was talking about part. Medicare.
Yes.
The donut hole is like $3,100 and something dollars.
Yeah, on up to 51. In the space in between
after
the 51.
It's like $2,200 and something, and then when you get to that, Well, then the donut hole is like 30-something. And I don't think it's going to take... I'm sure some people have already reached the donut hole.
Well, sure. And how many people can afford that $2,000-some dollars in the middle there that nobody pays for except on a fixed income?
Yeah, and it's a lot of people that I know, you know, that I have a friend taking like 25 medications. She's got so many things wrong with her.
Sure, and they've calculated that out. The government did, this administration did, to just how much the average person does use and all, and they've got it calculated just right. They do in order to...
Oh, he was bragging on about... having that prescription plan today. Boy, he just went on and on.
Well, I got a
conference.
Whoop-de-doo on that plan.
Yeah. Okey-doke.
Thanks for your call.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Did you see? I didn't get to see all the press conference today. I did see some cuts of last night when he said, I'd rather be right than popular. When history looks back, I'd rather be judged as solving problems and being correct rather than being popular. The president that chases the opinion poll is the president that will have failed policy. He said to Larry King last night, he says, because we're right on winning this war on terror and we've got a good economic record, he said, people are working under the leadership of the Bush administration in the Congress. What a huge bald-faced lie all of that is. This guy... I was livid when I saw that. This guy is sacrificing American lives every single day in order to find a way to prove himself right on the Iraq war. It was wrong from the beginning. It's still wrong. It's still immoral. And it's still a horrible experience for the Iraqi and the American people. And this guy knows he's in the wrong. But he's more than willing to throw away the lives of even more of our young military men and women. He reminds me of one of those people you see in the casinos who are throwing more and more and more money in the slot machines. They know they're going to lose. They know they are, but just one more quarter in the machine. Just one more. And then their money is gone. But there's still hope, so they run down to one of the pawn shops there in Vegas or Atlantic City, and they pawn their jewelry so they can get just a few more spins of the wheel. And, of course, you know the outcome 99.9% of the time. The only difference is that Bush is pawning your possessions and my possessions and the possessions of our kids and grandkids. This guy has no conscience. He knows full well what he's doing. And he just doesn't care. He is the worst president in our nation's history. He is. Then they're, well, I don't pay attention to polls because I got to do what I got to do. Yeah. Yeah, you got to do what you got to do. You got to do what you got to do to try and save your reputation, boy. And I got news for you. You will never, never salvage your reputation and your legacy as a president of the United States. Never. Not now, not 50 years from now, not 100 years from now. 100 years from now, they will still be talking about you as the worst president in American history. You know how I know that? You know how I know that no one can be a worse president than George W. Bush? Because if we ever have a president worse than George W. Bush, that'll be the end of this nation. That'll be the end. If we had just a few more years of this administration, that might be the end. The guy's a loser. Get on there all high and mighty on the Larry King. And then I heard him today. It's a disgrace. It's just a disgrace, and it just, it's upsetting. Hey, after the top of the hour, I do want to remind you, we're going to have Christy Setzer, who's the Senate Majority Report Communications Director, and we're going to talk about this phone jamming scheme. We had some more news on that today. We found out that dear Kenny Melman is in it up to his ears, and the White House as well, and we're going to talk to her about that right after the top of the hour, so I'm sure you'll want to hear that. And I got some good news today. A new poll out shows that Ted Strickland is holding a 14-point lead over the Secretary of State Ken Blackwell in Ohio. And that's a Rasmussen poll, so it's pretty reliable. 50-37%, that's music to my ears. Absolutely music to my ears. I would just croak if Kenny Blackwell won the governorship of Ohio. Ohio's coming around. I said they would, and they are coming around. And I had this story sent to me today. Transcripts reveal reporter's central role in the plane outing. Notebooks belonging to former New York Times reporter Judith Miller indicate she may have been told about a covert CIA operative, Valerie Plame Wilson, by another what? Oh, wait a minute. The story's by Jason Leopold. Never mind. I didn't see that. I'll repeat no Jason Leopold stories on this program. Don't think I need to. How many of you saw the Michelle Malkin mess that she's in now? You might have missed the story, but it's worth a look at. It appears that Michelle Malkin, dear Michelle Malkin, is taking some heat from her compadres. Her compadres on the right, because she failed to apologize after heaping a great deal of vitriol on a woman who subsequently committed suicide. Well, now Malkin has lashed back at her critics. In her response, she smeared the dead woman again, calling her a corruptocrat. This is quite a story, and here's what happened. Not long ago, the news broke that some of the military recruiters fled a University of California Santa Cruz job fair, and after some protesters forced their way into the fair. Malkin immediately, as only she can do, sprang into action. She wrote that, end quote, UC Santa Cruz hates our troops, end quote, described the school as seditious, and instructed her online army of pod people to direct their wrath at UC Santa Cruz Chancellor Denise Denton, even though it wasn't at all clear why she should be held responsible for the protest. Naturally, Malkin posted contact info so her pod people could more easily shriek and howl about what a traitor this chancellor apparently was. Well, on June 24th, the Chancellor Denton went and jumped from the roof of one of the tallest buildings in San Francisco. The reasons are murky, though news reports say that politics, scandal, and her high public profile may have played a role. Did the attacks from Malkin and her marching followers play a role, too? Really, no one's alleged that, in fairness. On the other hand, being fingered by the Malkin gang wouldn't exactly ease one's mental anguish, obviously. Either way, Reason Magazine's David Weigel has now pointed out that it might have been, you know, in good form if Malkin expressed some sort of remorse for directing so much vitriol her way preceding her suicide. Weigel wrote, quote, "It might become her to apologize for smearing an academic and directing people to direct their outrage to her office in what were the final troubled months of her life." Well, needless to say, Malkin didn't like that. And just a short time ago, she lashed back, instructing her army of pod people to now point their fingers at Weigel and bellow and shriek at him, too. And wouldn't you know it, in defending herself, Malkin just couldn't resist one more parting shot at the dead woman. She wrote, "If I had said anything, his ilk would have jumped all over me for not having the compassion to keep quiet about her various scandals and corruptocrat ways and let her loved ones mourn in peace." That, of course, is just another slur masquerading as compassion from Malkin. She said she didn't describe the chancellor as traitorous. She merely said she was seditious. Michelle Malkin, as we've often said on this program, woman hell-bent upon trying to out-culture and culture, but she's not man enough to do it. My, oh, my. We've got a lot to talk about today on the program yet. We've got another hour left after the news, 866-546-5254. That's 866-546-5254. We're going to talk a little bit about John Ashcroft and Jack Abramoff. And a little bit about Ken Mellman and Jack Abramoff. Let me ask you, what Republican in Washington is not connected to Jack Abramoff? That'd be the better question, wouldn't it? We've mentioned so many Republicans who are connected to Jack Abramoff in, some very nasty ways. And I think it'd be good just once to hear from some Republicans who aren't connected to him at all. Is there any Republican in Congress who didn't have some dealings with Jack Abramoff? And if so, how did they avoid it? My. If they did, I bet they didn't get any money from him. That's and also in the next hour, we want to talk a little bit about Nazis in our military. Yeah, neo-Nazis in the United States military. It might perhaps just explain a little bit about some of the problems that our military is experiencing over there right now. Well, we're going to stop for the news at the top of the hour. Don't go anywhere. Going to have a good interview right after the top of the hour. Got lots to talk about. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. Do give us a call after the news. You're listening to The Guy James Show, and we'll be back in just a few.
This is the Quality News Network. The FBI confirms that it has uncovered and thwarted a plot by foreign terrorists to bomb New York's tunnels, a plot uncovered months ago, and Lebanese authorities have confirmed that at least one Al-Qaeda operative has been arrested in Beirut in connection with the plan. New York Congressman Peter King, who chairs the House Homeland Security Committee, says he's been aware of the investigation for 9 months and that it is still ongoing. This is the one-year anniversary of the suicide bombings in London's subway system, which killed 52 and wounded 700 people, and where the police chief says another attack is likely. The Discovery crew is busy today unloading thousands of pounds of cargo and supplies for the International Space Station to be replaced by thousands of pounds of garbage, which Discovery will bring back when it returns to Earth. An Israeli cabinet member is suggesting that Israel may consider the release of some Palestinian prisoners if militants release an Israeli soldier kidnapped 2 weeks ago and also end rocket fire and other attacks. 3 more Palestinians were killed in today's fighting. At least 23 died yesterday, along with one Israeli soldier. In Iraq, at least 10 people have been killed following attacks on 4 mosques in 3 cities. 3 of the mosques were Sunni, 1 was Shiite. 1 coalition soldier in Afghanistan has been killed, along with 8 rebels, after they attacked a convoy. There are reports that North Korea may be getting ready to launch another long-range missile, one capable of reaching the U.S. It's the first attempt several days ago, ended just 40 seconds after launch when the missile exploded. Meanwhile, the U.N. Security Council is scheduled to vote tomorrow on a revised draft resolution from Japan that threatens sanctions against North Korea. In Brussels, European Union negotiators report progress in their talks last night with Iran. Another meeting is scheduled for Tuesday, at which time EU says they expect a substantial response to the incentives proposal for Iran to stop uranium enrichment. Felipe Calderon, Mexico's newly elected president, says he wants to include the opposition in his cabinet. But his opponent in the election, Andres Miguel Lopez Obrador, says he does not accept the election results and will challenge them in federal court. The margin of victory was less than 0.5%. The country's busiest airport is also the one with the worst on-time record. The U.S. Department of Transportation reports that during the month of May, flights departing Chicago's O'Hare and Midway airports were late more often than any place else in the United States. Arriving flights were also chronically late. Those numbers reflect a nationwide drop in May in on-time performance by airlines at the 31 busiest U.S. airports. You're listening to Quality News Network. Coming up next, we'll have the latest business news and stock prices.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
The nation's payrolls increased by just 121,000 last month. That's about 40,000 fewer than expected. The latest Labor Department figures also show that the unemployment rate held steady at 4.6%. General Motors has announced that it will hold exploratory talks with Renault and Nissan regarding GM's potential participation in a three-way alliance. Advanced Micro Devices is cutting its second-quarter sales forecast due to an emerging price war with Intel for chips that power desktop and laptop computers. 3M reports that because of lower-than-expected sales and higher startup costs at 3M Optical Films business, it believes its second-quarter earnings will fall below previous expectations. eBay says it will not allow its sellers to use Google Checkout, the payment service launched last week by the search engine. New Jersey finally has a new state budget agreement, but still has to be approved by the legislature before the Atlantic City casinos can reopen. That could happen by tonight. The White House has announced that Henry Paulson will be sworn in on Monday as the nation's next Treasury Secretary. And Tenet Healthcare, the nation's second-largest hospital chain, says it has received $340 million from its insurance claims after half a dozen of its hospitals suffered business interruptions caused by Hurricane Katrina. The light sweet crude oil was in record territory earlier today, but has fallen back and is now trading at $74.45 a barrel. That's down 69 cents from yesterday's close. The Dow Jones Industrials are down 104, NASDAQ is down 10, the S&P 500 is off by 3. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Diana Walter. It's now...
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Welcome back. Special welcome to all the Guy James Show listeners, all of you folks on our favorite websites all around the country, and dare I say all around the world. So many people from outside the country listen to the program. I never cease to be amazed about that. So many people, particularly in England and the Scandinavian countries, pay very, very close attention to what goes on in American politics. And, of course, all of you do as well. As promised, before we went to break, I told you that Christy Setzer is going to be with us from the Senate Majority Report. I got a release this afternoon about this phone jammer scandal that we've been talking about on the program. Christy, are you with us?
I sure am.
Hey, welcome to the program, and thank you for coming on today and explaining this latest release. New information on this phone jamming scandal that's been, well, it's taken place clear back in 2002, but you've been working on this for a long time.
That's right. Our group actually, which is called the Senate Majority Project, we actually started working on it back in December when we uncovered the fact that James Tobin, who is the latest to have been sentenced and convicted in this phone jamming trial scandal, we found out that he had placed over 100 calls to the White House when he was working in New Hampshire in 2002. So this is sort of a little scandal that could. I mean, this is something that for a very long time people had tried to dismiss as just a local peccadillo until it became increasingly clear that these people were increasingly in touch with the White House and the RNC and possibly even the Justice Department as they were conducting this election crime. So the story today is that the fourth person who's been indicted in the scandal, whose name is Sean Hansen, he ran a company called Milo Enterprises, which was based out in Idaho. And they're a small operation. Basically what happened was the company that was contracted to make the phone calls subcontracted out to Milo to make the hang-up calls themselves. They weren't involved in strategy or anything like that. Sean Hansen's company simply hired people to call the phone lines, hang up. And he was indicted back in March. just the other day, his lawyer filed a motion that said in their trial this fall, they plan to argue, or they could argue as one of their possible defenses, that Mr. Hansen was believed he was acting on behalf of the government. He believed he was acting on behalf of the White House. So we found that very interesting.
And the White House at the time did contain Ken Mellman.
That's right. He was the White House political director at the time, and obviously has since gone on to become the RNC chair.
And the 100 phone calls, that's over a period of how long?
It's over a period of about a month, around Election Day in 2002.
Okay, three calls a day, every day. I've got some good friends. I don't call them three times a day, every day. There's got to be more going on here than just a little friendly chat going on with the White House, wouldn't you say?
That's right. I mean, what we think is, now what the White House has said and what Ken Mellman has said is that this is all part of normal Election Day activity. But it just seems to us the issue is that it's not that they were so intricately involved in the New Hampshire Senate election, but it's that they were so intricately involved in a Senate election in which the Republican won by committing a crime. And is now, you know, the person who benefited from that is now a sitting senator, John Sununu. You know, we certainly think that it's something that should be looked into more.
Did they attempt this in any other states that you know of?
There have been some rumors. There's been some testimony at trial that would suggest that, but there was nothing definitive. That's something that we really want to get to the bottom of, especially because people like Tom DeLay and Jack Abramoff might have been involved as well.
Oh, I can't believe that Tom DeLay and Jack Abramoff. I was speaking about Jack, my dear friend Jack, just a few minutes ago, and I can't believe that. Oh no, oh poor Jack. I'm sorry, and I know you guys. I said a little earlier in the program. I was talking about people across the aisle from my party being affiliated with Jack Abramoff, and I said maybe the better question would be who isn't connected to Jack Abramoff from my friends across the aisle. But as if he doesn't have enough on his plate right now. It's really hard for me to accept that this would, having worked so well. Well, I mean, I guess that's an arguable point since they've been caught, but. The basic strategy did work. It's hard for me to believe that it's isolated to one state.
Especially given that, you know, these were not low-level operatives. Probably the lowest-level operative who was involved in the scheme, and the person that they tried to pin it all on, was the fellow Chuck McGee, who was the exec director of the New Hampshire Republican Party at the time. But everyone else that they were talking to about this was a national Republican operative. James Tobin was the Bush-Cheney campaign chair for New England in 2004. He actually had to step down right before the 2004 election because of the negative press surrounding this. And Alan Raymond, who ran GOP Marketplace, the company that strategized about the calls, he too had been just a high-level Republican operative for many years. He'd run the New Jersey Republican Party. So these weren't two-bit players.
No. And I've been probably a bit remiss here. I probably got into the meat of this a little too quick for I know most of our listeners know exactly what we're talking about here. But would you mind going over exactly what this strategy was here, how it worked, and what it was that they were doing?
Sure. In 2002 in New Hampshire, there was a very close Senate election between Gene Shaheen and John Sununu as Democrats were trying very hard to get out the vote. Republicans had a different strategy. They decided that on Election Day, they would hire a firm to shut down the phone lines of the Democratic headquarters and field offices, about six different lines, and also the phone lines of firefighters Get Out the Vote organization. So including a hotline that was offered to give voters rides to the polls. Now, obviously, it's illegal, and since Election Day, they did succeed in actually shutting down the phone lines for a couple hours on Election Day. What we think happened is that they actually tried to call it off the morning before the polls even open, but didn't succeed. So the scheme did work for a couple hours, and then they were successful in shutting it down. But since then, two people have gone to jail for it, a third was just sentenced, is scheduled to go to jail, and this fourth person that we've been talking about is set to go to trial this fall. But as we've been researching it more and more and talking about it, and there's become more press on it, it's like layers of an onion. There's just higher-level people involved at every turn. Once it was uncovered that James Tobin had been calling the White House while all this was going on, then we found out that GOP Marketplace was in part owned by Mississippi Governor Haley Barbour,
there's a big layer of the onion right there.
Right. Who's also, of course, the former RNC chair. There's another state involved. Then we found out from one of the Republican lawyers in the case that he said, now maybe he was just blowing smoke or maybe he actually knows something, that that the Justice Department had actually already investigated the White House on this matter, and that they didn't find anything wrong. Now, that was news to anybody who's been following this case because, you know, we certainly had no idea that there had been any kind of Justice Department investigation. We weren't sure who was investigated, what they found, and, you know, what grounds had caused them to investigate in the first place that they, you know, then suddenly later decided, credible.
Would that have been the Ashcroft Justice Department or Gonzalez?
And that's another good question.
All the
Justice Department said about this was, quote, the investigation was thorough.
Let's face it, it doesn't matter. Let's leave partisanship aside here for a moment, and I am partisan. But in any Justice Department, an investigation could be a letter typed up and put in a file, could it not?
Sure.
Here, we've investigated it. Nothing here to watch. Move on.
Exactly.
Okay.
I mean, and there's no reason to think that they've prosecuted or investigated fully.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, especially since they've never mentioned it. I've heard no mention of it from the Justice Department. Anything at all other than what you said about they looked at it and didn't find anything, but. One would think if they were taking a serious look at it, the public might. Well, then again, I'm talking about the Bush administration, but one would think that we might have heard something to the effect that they were investigating it, but we did not, insofar as I know, anyway.
Right. And think about it this way. I mean, this is This is a scandal that the Republicans have stonewalled at every turn. They have put up. The RNC has put up close to $3 million to bankroll James Tobin's defense. They put up a team of a dozen lawyers. They've tried to just shut it down at every turn. The New Hampshire Democratic Party at one point filed a civil suit, seeking monetary damages, obviously, for everything that's gone on. The Republicans have stonewalled and tried to shut that down as well. All we're looking for are the answers as to who started this scheme. Who paid for it, and we want the people who were involved to be held responsible.
Well, it sounds as though this Sean Hansen might be a very important piece of this puzzle.
I think that's right, because I think that he himself is a low-level player, but I think that he seems willing to name names because he has nothing left to lose.
Yeah, I mean, he's not going to get a presidential pardon or anything like that, so... it might behoove him to play ball with people on this.
Right, and he's actually being represented by a public defender, unlike Tobin, who
has
a $3 million defense.
No $3 million for Sean Hansen. I wonder how many people this involved in, employees this involved with the Milo. Of course, they obviously anybody doing this would know what it was they were doing. I wonder how many calls it took, how many people it took to make calls to put a stop to shut down the phone lines for a while. Does anybody have any idea, I wonder?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. It was about 800 calls, I believe, that were made, hang-up calls.
Hey, boy.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that wouldn't be easily done, that's for sure.
No.
And Haley Barbour, dear Haley Barbour, former RNC chairman. was partly owned. He was part owner of the Milo Enterprises. Was this at the same time? And this was at the same time Hansen was part owner.
It actually wasn't. It wasn't Milo Enterprises that he owned. It was GOP Marketplace, which was Milo Enterprises was just the subcontractor firm. The big firm, the people that got in touch, that you know, strategized on this. The company was called GOP Marketplace. It was part owned by a guy named Alan Raymond, who, as I said, had been big in New Jersey politics. A bunch of these guys had actually also worked on Steve Forbes' campaign together, his presidential in 2000. So it was part owned by Alan Raymond, but it was also in part about one-third owned by Haley Barbour. And Haley Barbour owned it from the time it started. He provided the startup financing for it. He gave them the startup loan of $250,000, and he remained owner and managing partner until it went defunct in 2003, shortly after the scandal ended.
Oh, wouldn't it be fun to be able to give lie detector tests and truth serum to people in Washington?
Sure would, yeah.
Oh, there'd be some things, maybe nobody'd want to know. I'm not sure. Well, I assume you're a long way from finishing your work on this.
We sure are. Yeah, we uncover new stuff every day.
Yes. Well, I hope you'll keep us informed. And, Christy, I very much appreciate you coming on the Guy James Show and letting all of our listeners know, because they've asked about this, and we've talked about it on the program, and it's a subject of some interest. And I appreciate you coming on the show. Ladies and gentlemen, Christy Setzer, Communications Director for Senate Majority Project. And, Christy, thank you ever so much.
Thank you, Guy.
Yes. True serum and lie detector. Wouldn't it be fun? Wouldn't it be fun to hook them all up? Both sides of the aisle. Let's just say at the end of every year, if you're in the Congress of the United States, you got to have a day where everybody's got their truth serum and gets interviewed, and then everybody gets hooked up the lie detector machine just to make sure everybody's clean every year. Wouldn't it be fun? I know I'd be violating some kind of rights there. I shouldn't talk that way, but it'd be fun. Oh, my, oh, my, oh, my. Haley Barbour's name in there. Ken Melman's name in there. 100 phone calls to the White. No, we didn't. No, we didn't talk about this. 100, yeah, but there's 100 phone calls here. 100 to the White House. So, oh, yeah, but, it's just a little friendly conversation. After all, that's all it was. Just a little talk amongst friends. Mm-mm-mm-mm-mm. You know, I have to hand it to these guys, all of them, in Ohio, in Florida, with the crazy Catherine Harris, and in New Hampshire, all over the place. They've done a hell of a job. They have. When you stop and think about it, they left no stone unturned. Now, how many of you would be devious enough? And let's forget any partisanship on this. It doesn't matter what party you're in. How many of you would be devious enough sometime before election, say, let's see. First of all, let's get everybody off the voter rolls that we can. That'd be a good thing. And secondly, let's not deliver enough voting machines to the area and make them stand in long lines. That'll discourage some of them in heavily Democratic or Republican areas, wherever you're trying to influence. Let's see. What else is there? We can hack the voting machines. Yeah, we can do that too. Who was it that sat over in the corner and said, "Hey, I know. Let's disrupt their phone bank so they can't call the voters on election day and get them out to the polls." Who is the guy that came up with that, or gal? They thought of everything. Dotted the I's, crossed the T's. The only thing that's a surprise here is that they got caught doing any of it. It really is a surprise. And kudos to the Senate Majority Project for getting this story out and continuing to doggedly pursue it, and they have all along. So hopefully this Sean Hansen will squawk like a turkey, and we'll get more information from him. I would love to have somebody march into court and point the finger at Ken Melman and Haley Barbour and say they did it. Would they get presidential pardons? I imagine they would. I imagine they've got a list all drawn up of who all's going to get presidential pardon if it should become necessary. We were going to talk a little bit about, I don't know where I did what I did with my notes here, these hate groups. I was surprised to read this. I didn't know anything about this, these hate groups supposedly infiltrating the military. It said a decade after the Pentagon declared a zero-tolerance policy for racial hate groups, recruiting shortfalls caused by the war in Iraq have allowed large numbers of neo-Nazis and skinhead extremists to infiltrate the military, according to a watchdog organization, the Southern Poverty Law Center, which tracks racist and right-wing militia groups, estimated that the numbers could run into the thousands. Citing interviews with Defense Department investigators and reports and posting on racist websites and magazines. They're saying, we've got, and I quote them here, we've got Aryan Nations graffiti in Baghdad. And they quoted, in regards to that, they've quoted a Defense Department investigator. My God. This report said that neo-Nazi groups like the National Alliance, whose founder, William Pierce, wrote the Turner Diaries, the novel that was inspiration and blueprint for Timothy McVeigh's bombing of the Oklahoma City Federal Building, that he sought to enroll followers in the Army to get training for a race war. These groups are being abetted, the report says, by pressure on recruiters, particularly for the Army, to meet quotas that are more difficult to reach because of the growing unpopularity of the war in Iraq. Now, this is some disturbing news that people like this would be in our military. And moreover, it's really disturbing when you hear of some of the alleged atrocities that are taking place with respect to our military. If, in fact, there are these neo-Nazi-type Aryan Nations groups in the military of the United States, obvious racist, that would explain some of the horrible things that we've heard, would it not? This is a report that I really and truly hope that there's no basis in fact for it, but it appears that there is. That's a really, really disturbing story, and I do hope that they find it, that maybe there's nothing to it. I don't know. I hope so anyway. Anyway, somebody sent us a little song to dedicate to our good friend Pills Limbaugh, and I think we'll do that right now.
We're living in an oxycontinent. Let's make a new oxycontinent. Living in a prescribed environment. Protecting me from being violent. I'm where my doctor wants me to be. Wants me to. We're living in an oxycontinent. Don't do drugs unless the pharmacist. Postponing my early retirement to get off this oxycontinent. I'm where my doctor wants me to be. Just around the corner from the pharmacy. Three steps back from reality. From not getting laid, contact your pharmacist because he needs to get paid. And if you don't think you need it, they'll take you away. We're living in an oxycontinent. Let's make a lethal oxycontinent. These are products of a fascist government. Just take a pill and you will get over it.
Of all the things to focus on, what is it about Bring 'Em On that so arouses them? What is it that so offends them? What is it that so irritates them? Oh, so you little hangers-on in Iraq, so you're going to threaten our guys? Well, come on. Bring them on. We'll do. This intimidates the Democrats. What is the big deal?
Yes, Mary.
I have a son in Iraq, and I just wanted to tell y'all, my child has a family that loves him, too.
Yes.
His little girl was just born in February. When he get back here, she'll be on your own. And I'm trying to tell y'all, listen to me, please. You don't understand. We got a child there. I raised my child to be a good person. This is too much for them to die away on. In some land that they don't know about, every day I get scared. I just wanted to tell y'all that.
What is the big deal?
And we're back. Got a half hour left in the program. Do hope you'll give us a call. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. I'd like to welcome everybody listening on the Head On Radio Network chat room, the Tom Hartman Show chat room, the folks at Democratic Underground, and lots more around America and around the world. Thank you. Thank you so much for listening to the Guy James Show today. You know, we've talked a lot about this over the years now. My God, the years are piling up on this Iraq situation. It's just hard to believe now that that this has lasted almost as long as the Second World War. It really is. It's just stunning when you stop and think about it. But don't worry, those 2,500 and some odd people, what is it, 2,537 or whatever the number is right now, it's just a number. Tony Snow was good enough to point that out to us recently, that it's just a number, and it's not, you know, just a number. But, you know, it comes down to the morality of the situation. I was really surprised today, and I guess I'll ask you this question in a little bit, but I asked somebody I know very well today, asked him what I thought was an important question, and I was rocked back on my heels by the answer. And maybe this is something that that's just getting away from me. I really believe that Democrats, and I mean this to the depths of my soul, that Democrats should seriously consider not backing any, and I mean any Democrat that's backing the Bush occupation of Iraq. And of course, you know, there's lots of issues facing our country today, and I don't want to come off as one of these one-issue guys, because I am not. We know we got the economy, the health care, Social Security, the immigration problem. But I truly believe that for many reasons, getting us out of Iraq should be the number one issue addressed by the Democrats running for election or re-election. And I truly believe there's very little doubt. Very little doubt where the rank and file Democrats stand on this problem. Do you agree with that? The actions taken by Bush and Iraq are not only ruining Iraq, but they're ruining our country as well. And I think people are losing sight of that fact. We're seeing in the last few days now reports coming out of agencies within the Bush administration saying the economy is starting to be, you know, and we've recognized that for a long time. Now people are starting to admit it. You know, if this continues, it's going to bankrupt us. And it's going to maim and kill thousands more of our young men and women in the armed services and allow the rest of the world to keep viewing us as a nation of a bunch of imperialistic thugs that are probably willing to do whatever's necessary to grab the natural resources of other countries to satisfy our own greedy needs. That's the way we're being viewed by other citizens of the world right now. And it's only going to get worse, with every other nation wondering when it's going to be their turn to suffer the death and destruction of the United States military when we decide that they've got something we want. And let's face it, that is what this is all about. It's all it was ever about. We said it on the outset of this, and I'm still saying it. It's about oil. Boiled down to the bottom, to the nitty-gritty, plain and simple, we went to war in Iraq for the oil. and so that we could establish a military presence in the entire area that would last for decades to come, so that we can have control of all of the oil in that region. And if it comes to the point where the oil is depleted in every other region of the world except for Canada and Mexico, we'll go to war against them as well. You do realize that, don't you? I guess my question for you is this. If the present suppliers of foreign oil deplete their supplies, is it then okay for the United States government to use military force to take the oil of another nation so that we can maintain our lifestyle in this country? If it comes to the point where we as a nation are going to slip into the dustbin of history along with the Roman Empire because we can't get any oil, is it then okay to say it's the survival of the fittest and just take the oil from other countries who have it? I say no. I say absolutely no. I say it's time to wean ourselves off of oil and use our good old-fashioned American ingenuity to come up with some sort of alternative fuels to accommodate the Americans' need for energy. And if we don't do that, maybe we deserve to join the Roman Empire in that dustbin in history. Maybe we do. But I say it's absolutely immoral and absolutely wrong as wrong can be to declare war on another nation to take their natural resources. And I would go down fighting on that. How do you feel about it? 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. Which brings me to the point I spoke of just a few moments ago. I asked a gentleman today, very much a gentleman, guy I've known for quite a while, very level-headed man, very intelligent guy, got money, he's doing okay. I asked him that very question. What if all the rest of the oil in the world's used up, and the only two countries that got any left is Canada and Mexico? We've used ours, we've used all the Middle East, we've used the Russians, we've used all their oil. Is it then okay to go ahead and declare a war on Mexico and our neighbors to the north, Canada, to take their oil in order for America to survive and fulfill our energy needs? Is that okay? That's the question I asked, and he looked at me without any hesitation and said, yes. Yes. We must maintain America. We must be the survival of the fittest. We must. No hesitation at all. And I admit I was somewhat taken aback by all that. I really was. I find it difficult that I can think that much differently than someone else on that issue. I find it just absolutely amazing that two human beings can come to such diametrically opposed positions on something like this. I can't conceive of doing that. I can't. I mean, there are many things that all of us disagree on, and you try and put yourself in the other guy's shoes, and you listen to his position, and you go, yeah, well, you know, maybe I have some understanding of that issue, but it's weighted a little bit toward my side, so I take the position I take instead of his. But I do understand his position. Not on this. Not on this. To me, there's no argument on this whatsoever. It's just plain wrong. And I can't, for the life of me, see how it's possible that that could happen. So, I don't know. Ask your friends that. Ask your friends that question, see what they think. If you got any Republican friends, you ask them that question. I don't have a lot of Republican friends. I really don't, as you might guess. But I asked this question of a gentleman today that's not a Republican. That's why I was taken aback so much. I know that he and I agree on many, many things. That's why I asked him. And that's why I was just totally shocked with his answer. And maybe you would be too. But You know, I'm finding out more and more, and I guess I should have realized this long before now. I didn't realize, and I guess, you know, it's one of those things, you get older, you get wiser. I ought to be real wise by now. Maybe I'm not, but the older I get, the more I understand that there is just differences that I never understood between people. Major differences that nowadays we can't even talk about. And it comes down to many times, a battle of terms. And I was looking at some of the Republican terms on things the other day, the things that I think, I just think they're terms. And No Child Left Behind comes to mind. You know, when you pair that one up with immigration reform, the way I see it, you get a broom and a mop bucket in every middle American child future. And the right to life, that quote right now, as we all know, actually the right to life only means before birth movement. That's all it means. After you're born, hey, I'm sorry, kid, you're on your own. And, you know, Bush's favorite, the war on terror, terrorism, or the Islamo-fascists or extremists, whatever it is this week. That's another lousy one. You know, a title is lousy when they keep trying to invent it, and they've tried to reinvent that one over and over and over again. They ought to just call it the war to retrieve our oil that's inconveniently buried all over the planet. That's what they ought to call it, or the war of we're bringing Christian peace to your country, even if we have to kill you all to do it. Or what's with those funny headscarves anyway? Or the war to prove that the neocon theories that look stupid on paper are even worse in practice. I just find it fascinating. I really do. And these terms, so just think it gives you the. It should prove to you that you should never, 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 never. Let me double that. Never vote for a Republican with ties to the oil or the defense industries, because they're ripping us off something terrible. And this war for oil is probably the most obscene thing America's ever done. I don't think there's any question about it. Let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, guys, it's Terry in Fort Myers.
Hi, Terry.
How you doing?
I'm great.
Your question is very thought-provoking.
Well, I hope so.
I mean, I had never thought about it that way. However, your friend or acquaintance or whomever that you pose that question to, I would have a very good question to come right back with to see if I understood his answer, and that would be, okay, so let me make sure I get this. I understand where you're coming from. So in essence, based on the premise of your answer, then if I run out of money, and I'm going to starve to death, and I'm going to lose everything I got, it's okay for me to come beat your ass and take everything you got, right?
Wish I'd thought of that. I was probably too shocked to come back with a comeback, but that's a good one.
It's about premise.
Yeah, yeah, it is, and you're right on the money there.
And so is it correct or is it incorrect? I don't know. Do you want me to beat your ass and take everything you got? Would that be okay fine?
Well, no, I don't think so.
Would you want me to go and beat up your 86-year-old mother and take everything that she's got because she's not strong enough to defend herself?
Excellent point. Excellent point.
You see where I'm going?
Yeah, 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 absolutely.
I think that brings the clarity of that whole situation right to the forefront.
Well, you should have been there. You could have done my thinking for me in that one. you're right on the money. I mean, that's perfect.
I'm very good at arguing.
Well, I'm going to have to ask him that tomorrow. I will see him tomorrow, and I did tell him I was going to tell my audience this today, and so I'm going to bring that up. I am. I think you're. That's going to be embarrassing.
Well,
not for me.
For some people, it might help them to think beyond this primitive survival thing.
Yeah.
It's about, we're not there yet, so obviously, especially since there is technology that's been around for well over 50 years that would eliminate the oil industry completely or our need for it, why aren't we not going that way?
Well, there's just a...
Why, but the thing is when you're talking to people, why shouldn't we go that way? Like right now.
Yeah. Well, there's just a good bit of money to be had first from the other one, a few bucks.
Yeah, there's what, $100 billion a quarter?
Yeah,
something. With all the oil companies together?
Yeah, think something like that. Yeah, yeah. Well,
there's some serious pocket change.
Yeah. I think you're right. And they're going to get every last drop of it.
Well, I don't want to take up any more of your time. I just want
I like your call. I like your call. And tomorrow I'm gonna just put that right straight at him and ask him. And I will inform you of the answer.
That'd be great. You had a great show. Keep doing a great job, buddy.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye now.
Bye now. Hey, good idea. Good idea. Why didn't I think of that? See, I'm not that quick. I just kind of looked at him in stunned silence and said, well, all right, I didn't think you'd feel that way. Maybe I wasn't just in an arguing mood, but he just had the perfect call right there. Is it okay? Okay. Is it okay if we come over and beat up your grandma? Oh, boy, that's a good one. That's good. I like that. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
This is Alan.
Hi.
Some terrible people have taken over the country. I wish you could be our Martin Luther King guy.
Well,
someone that would lead millions of us against these people.
Well, we need a guy like that right now. We do. I don't know if I ever told you the story, but I got a chance to march with Martin Luther King one time in Ohio, and it was a great honor, and I'd do it again. And we need a leader to step forward. And I think we're kind of adrift right now. I think America, if you look around all of America, I think the Democrats and the Republicans right now, and neither one is seeing that great charismatic leader step forward and lead us. And I don't know what the answer is for getting that great charismatic leader, but we certainly could use one right now.
I'm still searching.
Yes, you know, Alice, you've been around long enough. You think back through the years, there's been that kind of a leader come forth, the Roosevelts and the Churchills and the JFKs and you know, people like that. But right now we just don't seem to have that man with that natural leadership that people just want to follow. You know.
Well, I thought Al Gore did a beautiful job on that movie.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I haven't seen the whole thing yet, just portions of it. And I hope to have time to see the whole thing soon. But
for everybody to go see it.
They certainly need to. That's for certain. And, you know, maybe there's a man that's about ready to step into the leadership position you know, draw people to him. We shall see. I hope so. I've said that. And I hope so. I would love for it to be Al Gore because he's a good and decent man.
Well, keep up the good work.
Thank you for your call, my dear. Bye-bye.
Yeah.
Who's it going to be? Who's going to step up? I noticed, what did I do with that? I'm so good at getting notes and then losing them. I had some notes here about who the heavyweights and lightweights are. Coming up in the presidential race. And, of course, they had Hillary and Al Gore as the heavyweights. And trying to think, they had John McCain on the Republican side, naturally. But it's going to be interesting to see if there is that one great leader on each side that comes up. I can't think of anybody on the Republican side. It sure appears to me that it's going to be John McCain. But then again... McCain knows what it's like to have that slime machine come after him. And the moment that the right, the Christian right, the evangelical right, let's put it that way, he's been courting them. He's been courting them hard. And it's going to be interesting to see if they do go over to his side. What is John McCain going to have to promise the likes of the Dobson and the Falwells and the Pat Robertsons? What's he going to have to promise them in order to get their support? And let's face it, he will need their support. And if he doesn't get their support, woe unto him. He will not get anywhere without their support. I look at this party nowadays, the Republican Party, and I shake my head. And believe me, and I'm sure you feel the same way. I know Republicans that are totally disgusted with the way things are right now. Not just with the way things are, but I know some good, solid Republicans that I've known for a lifetime that are totally disgusted with the Republican Party and what it's become right now. And I looked up some great writing by Barry Goldwater and what he thought about the religious right. And after all, Barry Goldwater was never short on opinions, and he's another man that if it was on his mind, is what I respected him for, if it was on his mind, he was going to speak it. Always spoke from his heart. He is the father of the modern conservative movement. He wasn't too fond of the anti-democratic radical right. And here's what he said about the radical right. And just let me give you a few quotes. I am a conservative Republican, but I believe in democracy and the separation of church and state. The conservative movement is founded on the simple tenet that people have the right to live life as they please, as long as they don't hurt anyone else in the process. This is Barry Goldwater speaking. I don't have any respect for the religious right. There is no place in this country for practicing religion in politics. That goes for Falwell, Robertson, and all the rest of these political preachers. They are a detriment to the country. A lot of so-called conservatives don't know what the word means. They think I've turned liberal because I believe a woman has a right to an abortion. That's a decision that's up to the pregnant woman, not up to the Pope or some do-gooders or the religious right. By maintaining the separation of church and state, the United States has avoided the intolerance which has so divided the rest of the world with religious wars. Can any of us refute the wisdom of Madison and the other framers? Can anyone look at the carnage in Iran, the bloodshed in Northern Ireland, or the bombs bursting in Lebanon, and yet question the dangers of injecting religious issues into the affairs of state? The religious issues of these groups have little or nothing to do with conservative or liberal politics. The uncompromising position of these groups is a divisive element that could tear apart the very spirit of our representative system if they gain enough strength. Barry Goldwater. And he is the father of the modern conservative movement, the real conservative movement. Not this group of crazies that's taken over the government now. While I've had serious disagreements with Barry Goldwater, I certainly can't disagree with one word of what I just read right there. Because what I just read you there, the quotes from Barry Goldwater, is nothing more than common sense. Common sense. I have to wonder. I have to wonder how these people have gotten so in the back pocket of this right-wing element, and they really have. Hey, we're going to pause for a break right now. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
Miles to Baghdad. soldiers, load up your guns and tie a ribbon around something. Something good has begun. Boy in the middle, he sits down to pray. He moves to the window, I can see him as he waves. Hey Mac, look out, Mac calls back, Billy, I'll be careful. I'm just trying to be brave. So tie a yellow ribbon around. Something lives beyond the grave.
And we're back. Last few minutes of the Guy James Show. You can still give us a call if you like, 866-546-5254. I was looking for some notes I had. Talking about this this business of the religious right taking over the country, trying to and Barry Goldwater was so vehemently against that sort of thing. Barry Goldwater, as I mentioned, I had a lot of reason to disagree with him, but he is a man who spoke a lot of common sense as well. I looked up a few things during that little song there from quotes from people on the right now about our schools, for example. Here's one from J.M. Sutherland, Ph.D., the Christian Alert Network. He says, only stupid parents would leave their children in the filthy, immoral, dangerous public education institutions. Robert Simmons, Citizens for Excellence in Education. There are 15,700 school districts in America. When we get an active Christian Parents Committee in all districts, we can take complete control of all local school boards. This would allow us to determine all local policy, select good textbooks, good curriculum programs, superintendents, and principals. Our time has come. Can any of you say Taliban? The Reverend Jerry Falwell. I hope I will live to see the day when, as in the early days of our country, we won't have any public schools. The churches will have taken them over again, and Christians will be running them. What a happy day that will be, Reverend Jerry Falwell. Should I say Mullah Jerry Falwell? School vouchers will prevent public school teachers from carrying out their liberal social experiment on our children, teaching them to hate America. You know, when I went to school, no one ever thought of teaching anybody to hate America. It goes on to say, distrust their parents and believe that big government is the solution to all of society's ailments. I never heard that when I went to school. I never heard that when any of my kids went to school. What a joke. This is from Mark Smith, the official handbook of the vast right-wing conspiracy. And one last one here. The Christian community has a golden opportunity to train an army of dedicated teachers who can invade the public school classrooms and use them to influence the nation for Christ. Dr. James Kennedy, Coral Ridge Ministries, and I believe that's out of Fort Lauderdale, Florida, if I'm not mistaken. These people are dangerous. And I didn't say one word against Christianity there. Not one word. And you won't hear me say anything against Christianity. I don't think those people have the sense they were born with. I think they're an aberration to Christianity. The Falwells, the Dobsons, the Robertsons, I think they're definitely an aberration to Christianity. I don't think they stand for what Christianity actually stands for. I think, and it's just my opinion, what do I know? But I believe if Christ could hear these people talk, he would turn his head and have to smile a little bit and say, hey, that's not what I meant at all. I really do believe that. I'm blown away by Falwell and Robertson and those folks. I really am. I have contempt for them. Always have. Always will. Stopped to listen to Falwell speak a little bit on TV the other night to see if he was as crazy as always, and yes, he was. Well, it's that time of day. It's that time of the week, actually. Friday afternoon. My gosh, where does the time go? Such a pleasure to have all of you along with us. This was kind of a short week, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. It went kind of fast. Had Monday and Tuesday off, and you might have as well. Anyway, we're heading into, hey, no more holidays until Labor Day. Have I got that right? I think it is. No more holidays until Labor Day. So let's be ready for a long, hot summer together. As always, I hope you will remember that this is a listener-donated program, supported program, and I hope you'll donate to the program at theguyjamesshow.com. We'd appreciate that very much. Helps us keep the machine rolling here. And do remember that you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. Thanks for listening, folks. See you on Monday.